2023, which was a challenging year for many sales organizations. Norman, if someone just clicked on this conversation and they're deciding whether to listen or not, what's the benefit if they stick around?
I think the benefit of sticking around is that this conversation that we're having today is really about getting onto the right track for a fast start in 2024.
What do you think were the key factors contributing to these widespread difficulties?
There's a lot of uncertainty about the economy, and so I think sales cycles started to become a lot longer.
What are some key qualities of an effective sales coach?
So I think someone who is an effective sales coach has credibility with the team. They've probably come up through the sales ranks. They've probably been a seller in the past, and they probably have very good, maybe not exceptional, but very good selling skills. But that isn't enough to be a great coach.
What final piece of advice would you give anybody listening to this right now? Norman, if someone just clicked on this conversation and they're deciding whether to listen or not, what would be the pitch to those people? What's the benefit if they stick around?
I think the benefit of sticking around is that 2023 for many sales organizations was a really difficult year. And in some cases, companies kind of got behind in Q1 and was really hard to catch up. And even if you had a good year in 2023, I think it's still very important to think about what can you do to get off to a fast start in 2024. If you get everything kind of in place early in the year, you get off to a good start to the year, you can kind of build on that momentum. If in any way you start to lose momentum at the beginning of the year, it's really, really hard to get it back. So this conversation that we're having today is really about getting onto the right track for a fast start in 2024.
Building on that point, Norman, reflecting on 2023, which was a challenging year for many sales organizations, what do you think were the key factors contributing to these widespread difficulties?
I think that there are a couple things going on. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about the economy. I think companies got very cautious. I think that we saw more decision makers getting involved in decisions. We saw a little bit more of what I would call scrutiny over budgets. And so I think sales cycles started to become a lot longer. I think there was another problem as well, which was a lot of the sales organizations were really not set up for pipeline growth. So they were too reliant on existing customers. And if your existing customers are buying less, you really need to figure out how you're going to build pipeline. So I think two challenges. We saw deal velocity start to slow. We also saw deal sizes start to shrink a little bit. And we saw a lack of growth in new pipeline generation.
Now, that's a great summary, Norman. Moving into 2024, what are the primary lessons you believe sales teams should carry forward from these challenges?
I think the first one is really about skills and making sure that people have the skills to be successful in their roles. Many companies have realigned sales roles or really transitioned. I think a lot about the engagements that we've done with clients recently. A lot of them have gone from product to full solution sales, or from point solutions to platforms. And the complexity of the sale is higher than it was in the past. And we also mentioned there's more scrutiny. So I think people over purchase decisions. So people have to become better sellers. And I think some of the salespeople really aren't equipped for their roles. Also with pipeline development, there's a lot of new things that have changed related to modern prospecting. Do people really have the modern prospecting skills they need? So I'd encourage companies to really look at the different sales roles and make sure that people they have in the roles have the skills they need to be successful. And in some cases, that may require a talent assessment, really just gauging, do we have the skills we need in each of the respective sales roles to achieve our sales goals?
Now, shifting gears, SRG is now part of SBI, and the firm recently published a white paper titled Getting Back to the Basics for a Fast Start to 2024, where we highlighted 7 key areas for a strong start in 2024. Could you share some of these and explain why they're particularly crucial?
So the first one I'll just kind of reiterate actually was from that research that we did around commercial skills. But really make sure that people have the right skills to be for their roles and really start to assess. And, you know, SBI has a wonderful talent assessment. I'm sure there are other talent assessments available, but the ability to really drill down and take a look, do we have the right skills for the people we need for the roles and making sure the organization is set up for success. Another key theme was really around how they're spending their time. Salespeople are involved in lots of conversations, internal conversations, forecast meetings, strategy meetings, but how much of their time is really spent either building the pipeline or working on existing opportunities? So I think another opportunity is to really look at time and time allocation and really see how do we get more of our time and client-facing activities. As part of that, I'd also say that there's probably more work that needs to be done around cold call planning. I think that, and I wrote a blog on this a couple of years ago, maybe it wasn't even that long, on why I think call planning is the most essential role. I think just to kind of go out to your client base with generic messaging is not effective. You have to think about, okay, did I research the company? What's going on within that organization? What's going on broadly in their industry? And specifically, what are some of the key initiatives and who are the people that I'm talking to? And I use the word people because I think a lot of salespeople have a tendency to get really single-threaded within an organization. And as we talked about earlier, there are just more people involved. So really ability to map the organization, understand who all the different key stakeholders are, what their priorities might be. And I think that level of call planning will lead to a more insightful, effective conversation around creating value for that customer.
That's an interesting point, Norman. I want to click now on aligning selling skills with sales roles. How do you suggest companies identify gaps in their team's competencies and address them effectively?
I think I would look at the pipeline and I'd look at the closed won and closed lost and just take a look, what is the difference between top sellers and what those ratios look like for your top sellers? And for sellers that maybe aren't your top performers, in the closed loss column, at what stage in the pipeline did we lose that customer? Were there qualification gaps? I think there almost always is a qualification gap that associates where had they used different, better skills, they may have been able to progress with that opportunity. I think that's particularly important for competitive losses because that means the customer didn't decide to do nothing. They decided to go with one of the with a competitor for that solution. So I think by assessing kind of what's working well for your top sellers and where things are starting to fall off in the sales pipeline, win rates, velocity would be good indicators. And then within the stage that have fallen off on, what skills would they have needed to really advance to the next stage?
I hadn't thought it that way. Can you give an example on how this alignment has significantly impacted a sales team's performance?
Sure. I think that the premise is if I'm a salesperson, I may be hyper-focused on my sales process. I'm going to plan the call. I'm going to ask some questions. I'm going to provide a presentation. I'm going to overcome any objections they might raise, and then I'm going to go and look to close the opportunity. And that is, for most salespeople, the mindset. But that becomes a little bit of a push strategy. Actually, we did some other research this year where push strategies are really less effective. And pull strategies where you're really in alignment with your customer are much more effective. So an example of that would be taking those exact stages that I just mentioned from a sales process and saying, okay, am I creating interest for the customer? Are they able to focus on their priorities? Am I asking questions that really help them understand and better articulate what their needs are to me? Once I understand their needs, am I able to summarize what I'm hearing and put together a case where our solution, not necessarily a product, addresses those needs and get their buy-in that, in fact, this is going to put them in a better place than they were before. So it's really aligning the sales process with the customer's buyer journey. And I think sometimes, you know, I've heard from salespeople, well, they disengaged, they went quiet on me. Generally, that happens when we're no longer in alignment. So we have a collaborative alignment framework where we really look at each step as of the sales process as aligning with the stage in the customer's buying journey. And for example, when the customer is starting to evaluate their opportunities, they may go back and want to get more information. They may even want to readdress their sales priorities. But if that salesperson is looking to close, they're no longer in alignment with the customer because their customer's purchase process may not be linear in nature. So just education around how sales process aligns with purchase process and making sure you're actually guiding your customer through their purchase process and creating value along the way is a way to stay engaged with that customer and really create true value as a strategic partner or strategic advisor.
That's a great takeaway, Norman. I want to shift gears here. We, during our prep before this meeting, you emphasize the importance of deal planning and customer understanding. What are some common mistakes salespeople make in these areas, and how can they be avoided?
I think the first part is to make sure they're not just moving from opportunity to opportunity. Well, we also want to have multiple opportunities, actually baking in time. So I think one of the biggest mistakes is just a time allocation issue. It kind of gets back to the time study. If I move from one call, because now we can do many of our initial sales calls or many of our sales calls like we're doing right now on a in a virtual format. And so if I have a call at 10 o'clock and I have another call at 11 o'clock, another call at 12 o'clock, did I sufficiently plan? I think a lot of times people don't plan simply because they didn't build time in their calendars to actually do the requisite amount of planning. So I think the first thing is just setting aside time related to each opportunity to do some strategic planning. And then, again, I think it's a matter of going in, understanding what industry they are in. Have we done work in their industry before? Are there success stories I can share from similar work we've done with other clients? What kind of else, just based on simple internet searches or even AI searches, what can I come up with about the industry? Then I want to look at the company specifically. What's going on in the company? If it's a public company, what kind of, how are they doing financially, public or private? What are some of their key initiatives based on news releases? Who are the people that I know within the company? Maybe use some of the account mapping features at LinkedIn and really figure out, you know, have I mapped the account? Who are all the key people? What roles are they in? Do I have any connections with those people? So generally, it's about three tiers of planning around the industry, around the company, and around the individuals you're meeting with. And I think that will start to inform the type of questions you ask. I think another shortcoming is really not preparing thoughtful questions. And when you don't prepare thoughtful questions because you don't have a plan, you end up almost interrogating the customer as opposed to a conversation. But if you have really thoughtful questions and they're open-ended in nature, you really create this very high-value conversation. So one of the benefits, an ancillary benefit of planning, is just really creating really great questions to learn more about your customer and avoiding those questions that you might have asked had you not done the research. So a lot of the fact-based questions can be avoided by actually doing the research.
That's great, Norman, and I appreciate the straightforward list of questions that our audience can immediately start using to prepare for these calls. Now, could you paint the picture for me on how does the call planning that's taking place in this suggestion transforms the sales approach for the customer?
I think it gives a salesperson a lot more confidence, and they can move. One of my least favorite words in sales is the idea of a sales pitch. A sales pitch is a very much of a push strategy. Again, I don't think those are very effective, particularly in B2B sales. So by going through call planning, you're basically thinking about how you can align, and you're not skipping steps in the sales process trying to get to a close, but instead you're really focused on making sure you're meeting your customer where they are, asking thoughtful questions. And what I always like to think about is, are we having a high-value sales conversation? When you have a high-value sales conversation, you're coming across as an industry expert. You're coming across as a peer. You're coming across as an advisor, not as a pushy salesperson. So I think call planning can really downstream affect the conversation around needs identification, solution alignment, managing feedback from the customer, and even thinking about with their support, what those next steps look like.
I want to build on that point. You mentioned the pitfall of sticking to this push-based, outdated sales approach. Can you share an example of how an organization successfully transitioned to a buyer-driven sales process or a pull-based sales approach?
Sure. I think we're seeing numerous cases of this, particularly in the latter part of 2023. For other companies early, as soon as a client moves from what I would call like a primary product or just selling a series of products to really thinking about selling solutions or platforms, the complexity of the sale and the number of stakeholders goes up dramatically. But that's probably the biggest focus we've seen is the transformation from the product sale to the solution sale. And to support that, they're looking at more advanced selling skills. So it's not just a matter of push versus pull. In some cases, pushing may be effective in a very limited with a lower level stakeholder. But the problem is when you start to move up within an organization, the audience becomes increasingly more knowledgeable, and they're looking for you to actually, how are you going to solve their problem? And much like the question you posed to me, can you give me examples of other organizations? That's what they're going to be looking for. So being able to be really well prepared, very thoughtful, and actually sharing how the solution you're presenting puts them in a better place than they are today, based on what they've articulated to you or their priorities, is really crucial.
So it sounds to me that depending on the stage of the sales process, sometimes one approach may be more helpful than another one. Is that right, Norman?
Yeah, I don't want to get so boxed into approaches. Where I would really focus is on process alignment. Where is your customer, and what can you do to help them have the confidence they need to move to the next step in their purchase process? As a side note, I'll mention that a lot of salespeople really don't understand the purchase process. And one of the hypothetical questions I always like to ask customers, assuming you decided to move forward with us, what would that look like? Who else would be involved in the process? You know, can you kind of just walk me through what that's looked like in the past? Because that allows me to really understand the process they're going to go through in order to make a decision. So I think early in the process, understanding which other stakeholders are going to be involved, and really understanding more about what their priorities are, and then being able to present use cases that really align with those priorities.
Now, shifting gears a bit, in terms of coaching, what are some key qualities of an effective sales coach?
So I think someone who is an effective sales coach has credibility with the team. They've probably come up through the sales ranks. They've probably been a seller in the past, and they probably have very good, maybe not exceptional, but very good selling skills. But that isn't enough to be a great coach. But coaching skills can be developed. A coach has to be a really good listener. They have to be inquisitive. They have to have a lot of humility, because at the end of the day, they have a team, maybe of 5 to 7 people. It's really the performance of their team. If they kind of were a star salesperson, that transition may not be so easy. If they were getting a lot of individual recognition, what they really want to do is now change the spotlight from really being on them, but really onto their players. So I think a coach is humble. They're a good listener. They have the best interests of the team in mind. They're very good at asking open-ended questions, much like you would in sales, to really figure out what's important to the team. They're also able to candidly evaluate and motivate the people on their team. And most importantly, they make the coaching highly collaborative. It's really a team effort. So when you think about managing a team, you're kind of managing, and the salespeople are underneath the sales manager, a little bit more directive. I like to think about the coach actually pulling their chair on the same side of the table as their salesperson, and really having a great coaching conversation. So those would be some of the attributes I would look for in a great coach.
Now, that sounds interesting, Norman. And how do you see the role of sales coaches evolving in the context of today's sales environment?
I think it's more important than ever. I mean, we did some research with Selling Power magazine on the attributes that really lead to the highest performing sales teams. And it wasn't a surprise to any of us that sales coaching was the number one skill for managers. In an environment where the selling has certainly got more complex, I think we were speaking a little bit earlier about the change from product sales to platform sales and solution selling around even, you know, in the case of technology companies, full platforms or certainly broader solution sets for pretty much all of our clients. That's going to involve more stakeholders. There's more scrutiny over budgets. So selling skills are increasingly important in this environment, because closing business is more difficult and requires better skills than in a robust economy where you're, you know, to use the term, writing orders. It does require a lot more effort and skill by the salesperson. And so coaching has become also more important, because they have to really understand what techniques are most effective to be able to really co-assess their sales team, to really figure out where their sales team is doing well, what might need to change a little bit more. We talked about the importance of call planning. So certainly in an environment like this with more stakeholders, more scrutiny over budgets, really doing a better job of call planning. We also talked about aligning sales with the customer's purchase process. So really making sure, how do you coaching to make sure you're in alignment with your customers. Another aspect of coaching that's become increasingly important is deal coaching. So not just coaching on selling skills, being able to evaluate, you know, what are the velocity of sales opportunities, if an opportunity is really fully qualified, and maybe most importantly, to have a conversation about what's going on within a stalled opportunity, what will it take to advance that opportunity to the next stage. So I do think in this economy in particular, but always, sales and coaching is extremely important.
Norman, that was interesting. Building on that point, now moving from coaching to pipeline growth in 2024, where selling has become or is expected to be more difficult. For sales reps and BDRs tasked with self-generating new opportunities, what are some innovative strategies that you recommend?
So let me just back up, and I will get into some strategies, but just to back up and really frame that, there are really two challenges going on today. Mm-hmm. One is the opportunity where there's opportunities that are stalled, and so we're seeing a little bit of a bloated pipeline, and so we're seeing stalled opportunities, and that really gets to coaching around qualification and, you know, what is it going to take to move opportunities forward? Where is a customer in their sales cycle? Where do we really need to enhance the quality of our offering? The other challenge is the one you're speaking to right now, which is just general pipeline growth. And in today's economy, there are not simply enough warm marketing leads coming into pretty much any sales organization I know to allow the sales team, whether it be BDRs or full cycle sellers, to be reactive. So self-generating pipeline. And I think the most important thing there on self-generation is really figuring out who is your ICP, what are the accounts you're going to have, so really some account-based marketing and selling to really focus on accounts that best fit your ICP, similar to other customers that you've done business with in the past. Who are the personas in those accounts that you really need to gain entrance, mapping those accounts, and using much more of an all-bound strategy. I'm still a huge believer in outbound calling, even if that's to leave a voicemail to create some familiarity with a voice. We're seeing a lot on LinkedIn, using tools like LinkedIn Navigator, using outreach tools that complement your CRM system, and really using a multi-pronged approach. Where I think salespeople struggle the most is probably with the messaging. What is that simple message that's going to really create some level of interest to create openness? So we think about, you know, aligning your sales process with the purchase process. Prospecting is about creating openness. How do you create that openness for a conversation? And to create openness, you have to create interest. And so we often look, and I'm actually conducting a workshop on this right now, you know, for triggers, either external triggers that are going on in the economy that are really probably prevalent against, you know, with all companies. So if I'm talking to a CRO, I might talk about stalled opportunities, or I might talk about self-generation pipeline. Might be able to go a little bit deeper and actually focus on within the company, do some company research, really understand what their priorities are for the year, and really start to hone my messaging, short, crisp messaging around some internal or external trigger going on within that organization, and then make sure I'm using a multi-pronged approach, using different sources of outbound prospecting to reach them, and also not just going after one contact within an organization, but making sure that when I identify that ICP, I've identified maybe three or four potential points of entry into that account so they have kind of a broader set of stakeholders that I can try and create interest with.
All right, right. And then, Norman, one last question as we wrap up here, just to end up on a final note. Drawing from the lessons of 2023, what final piece of advice would you give anybody listening to this right now?
So first of all, not every company starts its year at the exact same time. I was actually just on a call earlier today with a company that starts its fiscal year in April. But let's just assume most companies are running a calendar year. The lesson from 23 to 24 is get off to a fast start. Our firm has done some really good research on some of the key aspects to look at. And those are really things that have to be done, you know, in the January, February, not later than March timeline. I think last year what we saw is a lot of companies, maybe this was even my kind of my opening comments, a lot of companies really got behind the eight ball a little bit in Q1. they weren't quite able to catch up. So even though they may have finished the year with a strong Q3 or Q4, it wasn't quite enough. So I would say really working on pipeline growth earlier in the year and a clear evaluation of the current pipeline, which of those deals are really realistic and which ones really need to be nurtured. So they'd have a very clean pipeline with active opportunities, and then figure out how much prospecting you really need to do. And, you know, depending on industry, I recommend roughly 3x, three times pipeline coverage. So if you have a quota of, you know, $25 million in Q1, you'd certainly like to start the quarter with about $75 million in your pipeline. So those would be some of the thoughts. Get off to a fast start quickly. And even if you're late, it's better to start now than to wait. So really engage the help you need, whether it's around sales enablement, sales training, development of frontline managers, and also just make sure there's a constant rhythm of communication. Ideally, you know, very positive, upbeat tone about where we could finish the year, but also realistic in terms of the work that needs to be done. And so I would say just ongoing communication with the people within your team about where your organization sits and what the priorities are, and maybe also narrow those priorities to three or four things that really will have the biggest impact on sale. Sometimes we can get carried away with too many priorities and then we don't really accomplish. Really zero in on three or four things. I think our, you know, fast start white paper identified 8. I'd probably zero in on the three or four of those levers that could have the biggest impact on your sales.
Okay. Well, with that, Norman, thank you for your time and for the great advice today.
All right. Nice chatting with you. Take care. Bye-bye.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer, plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.